Okay, page Yud Zayin. In the year Tafshin, Ish Kodesh Parshas Chayisar. So our Parsha begins, the 105 Pesukim of our Parsha begin, Vayihiyu Chayisara Meya Shana Ve'esrim Shana Ve'sheva Shanim Shnei Chayisar. Vayihiyu Chayisara, the life of Sarah was 100 years and 20 years and 7 years, Shnei Chayisara. These were the years of the life of Sarah. And Rashi comments to Perish Rashi, "Akach nichtav shana b'chol klal uklal." Why does it say shana, 100 shana, 20 shana? Why does it say 7? It says each time. Me'ah shana, esrim shana, sheva shanim. What's the pshat? So Rashi says, "Lomer lecha shekol echad nidrash l'atzma," because each one teaches us something different about the life of Sarah, bas kuf kabas chaf lechet. When she was 100, she was like 20 with regard to sin. In what sense? Ma bas chaf, just like a 20-year-old, lochata, sharei eina bas onchin. Just like a 20-year-old on a certain level is without sin because a person is not held accountable bidei shemayim until a person reaches the age of 20. So af bas kuf, velochet. So when she was 100, that just means you don't pay. You're buy now, pay later. You know what I'm saying?
Good to know.
Not so good to know. What's good to know is don't do avers. That's good to know.
Yeah, but now I know it's
not. Yeah, there's tshuva is real. However, we believe in tshuva. Tshuva is a real thing. Okay, but we can't do avers and then just expect to do tshuva. We have to. If tshuva is real, then it's real. Okay, fine. So when she was 100, she was like 20 in the sense that what? She was without sin. And she was bas chof, kabas zayin liofi. And when she was 20, she was like a 7-year-old with regard to her beauty. Now some actually question the nusach of this Rashi. Right? Because I would think that a 20-year-old is more beautiful than a 7-year-old. You look at the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni explains, I have a Mikras Gedolos Chumash with me. Chizkuni says, you have to understand, a 7-year-old, right, has a certain beauty that doesn't require an obsession with her beauty. She doesn't need to be so busy with the makeup and doing her hair just right. The 7-year-old is just, she's just cute because she's cute. She's a cute little child, sweet little girl. Right? And she's beautiful. There's a genuine beauty there. When a person gets older, then they start to become obsessive with their beauty and they start to be concerned about their beauty and they try to make themselves look a certain way. So what it's saying is that Sarah, when she was 20 years old, an age where, again, many young women are starting to think more about how do I appear, how do people see me, do people think that I'm pretty, am I attractive, am I beautiful? Right? Sarah maintained the innocence of a 7-year-old who didn't think in that way, wasn't busy thinking about that. Okay? So she had a spiritual innocence with regard to her sins, she had a innocence with regard to her self-image. She was a very holy woman, Sarah. Shnei Chayisar. Okay. So says the Rebbe, "V'navina ma merames zeh lanu." We need to understand why we're giving greater kavod to Sarah than really anyone else. Shebechol hatzidkanios haniskaros b'Torah on page Yud Zayin. Shebechol hatzidkanios haniskaros b'Torah lo nemar kol kach gadlus kmo al Sarah. We don't find by the other great women of the Torah that we try to speak so, you know, with such praise. That her whole life she was so innocent in every way, spiritually innocent. She was above her own gashmias. It's a very lofty thing. What was so uniquely great about Sarah? Again, she's the starting point, like Avram is. Va'odze yoser pella. But to make the question even stronger, shagam ba'Avram avinu shenemar lekamon, we find later on, by Avram Avinu, what does the pasuk say? It says also Gam Kain Shana B'chol Klal Klal B'chol Klal. It says by Avram also. It says Shana again and again and again, and we don't darshan it exactly the same way. Take a look at the footnote. Look at footnote 1. You see the pasuk? It's also in our parsha. Parachaf Hey Pasuk Zayin. Later in our parsha, pasuk says Ve'ela Yemei Shnei Chai Avram Asher Chai. These are the years of life of Abraham that he lived. Me'as shana, v'shivim shana, v'chamesh shanim. 170, and five. Right? So this is not like a unique way that the Torah presents the years of a person. V'Rashi pirish gamken shenir maz shahaya belochet. And Rashi says about Avram also, right, that Avram also, in a certain sense, was without sin, whatever that means exactly. Umikol makom lo chazer ha-pasuk pambeiz lomer shnei chai Avraham, kamo besara, l'rameis shekulan shavin l'tova. So let's unpack a little bit here. What does Rashi say? Let's go back to the pasuk. Again, the pasuk says, vayu chai sara, right, mea shana, esrim shana, sheva shanim, and then it ends, shnei chai sara. So you're bothered by two things. First of all, why does it have to say shana, shana, shana each step of the way? And second of all, why does it have to say shnei chai sara at the end, the years of the life of Sarah, when you already said at the beginning, vayihiyu chai sara? So what does Rashi say to that question? Why does it say shnei chai sara again at the end? Rashi says, we don't have another page in front of us, but the Rebbe was just meramis to it. Rashi says three words, shekulan shavin letova. These three words at the end of this paragraph, that's Rashi. He's not quoting Rashi, he doesn't say as it says in Rashi, but he's saying Rashi. Shekulan shavin letova. Why does it say, these are the years of the life of Sarah, 127, these are the years of the life of Sarah? To say that all of Sarah's years were shavin letova, were equally good. So let's just be honest before we go deeper for a second. Yeah? Emes? All of the years of Sarah's life were equally good? Sarah lived 127 years. The first 90 years of her life, she didn't have a child. The Chizkuni says, quote the Gemara in Nedarim, a person who doesn't have children is chashev kames. It's a terrible sorrow for a person who struggles with infertility. The last 37 years of her life, she was zocha, baruch Hashem, to what? To have children. The Baal HaTurim points out, what's the first word in our parasha? Take a look, vayihiyu. What's the gematria of vayihiyu? Take a look, vayihiyu. Got two yuds, that's 20. 37. Right. Why, says the Baal HaTurim, why? Because the 37 years from 90 to 127, in other words, what? From the time she was blessed at the age of 90 with a son, that she waited for 90 years. A person without banim is chash of kameis. She suffered for 90 years. Right? So those last 37 years, those 37 years, those were the good years, so to speak. But Rashi says something that's the exact opposite. Rashi says, kulan shavin letova. Rashi says all of her years were equally good. Kulan shavin letova. So I'm just asking, it's okay to add, when you're learning, it's okay to like not just play along, it's okay to actually think. Do we believe that? Were all of Sarah's years equally good? Let's just think about Sarah's life for a second. She was kidnapped twice. She was barren for 90 years. Her husband took another woman into the home who's treating her in a disrespectful way. She's not happy with Yishmael's hashpa on her sweet little Yitzchak when she finally has a Yitzchak. And Rashi says, Kulan Shavan Letova. Why? Because the pasuk starts off Chayesar and ends Chayesar, so that creates everything's equal in her life. I would imagine her joy and giving birth to Yitzchak, and seeing all the miracles that Chazal described that came along. And other barren women also gave birth in her merit, and they were thanking her, and everyone's crying, and they're celebrating. I would imagine those moments were probably more enjoyable than being kidnapped and nearly being raped. I would imagine. I don't want to make assumptions, but I think it's a reasonable assumption. Okay, that's Yitzchak. The end is very tragic, as we're about to learn about. So what's going on? What does Rashi mean, Kulan Shavan Letova? Just, you have to address the pshat for a second before we get to the Rebbe's real question, real point. You have a thought? Kulan Shavan Letova? Yeah.
I mean, just said that it was the same for her when she was 7 and she was 12. So maybe like some years were difficult, others were like maintained like the similar values.
Okay, good. So one way to say it is that Kulan Shavan Letova in the way of Gamzu Letova. It doesn't mean that I don't have better experiences and more difficult experiences. Of course we do. Of course we do in life. I like that. The roommates show up at the same time. I like that. It's good. Yeah. You're mechazik each other to get here. It's good. So Kulan Shavan Letova is like Gamzu Letova. Right? Did Rabbi Akiva have an easy life? I would say not. Rabbi Akiva, first of all, he had a terribly negative feeling towards Yiddishkeit for many years. He was a Ben Gerim, son of converts, shtickle, you know, outsider, had a tremendous animosity towards Torah, eventually put himself through the embarrassment of learning Torah at the age of 40. Rabbi Akiva was zochet to build a big yeshiva with Mesiras Nefesh and had the whole thing come crumbling down. He lost 24,000 students. Rabbi Akiva dies a martyr's death, having his flesh combed off his body, and the Talmidim are screaming, Rabbeinu Ad Kan! How far is a person supposed to go in this world? And yet Rabbi Akiva is the one who teaches us in Maseches Brachos, in the ninth parak, that a person should say, everything Hashem does is good. Kol da'avid rachmano, v'tav avid. Everything God does is latav, is latov, is good. Everything Hashem does is good. By the way, that's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Brachos. There's a halacha that a person should train himself to say, he should be ragil lomar, like it says in the Gemara. A person should be ragil lomar, everything Hashem does is for the best. It's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. That means we're supposed to live it. It's not just like, oh, Rabbi Akiva was a big tzaddik. You know the story, right? He had a candle and a rooster and a donkey. He's in the forest and the candle goes out and the animals kill his animals and he's all alone in the forest, not knowing what's going to be. And the morning comes and he sees that a group of crusaders had come to the city nearby and they had wiped out the city, and had his animals been alive, they would have found him, they would have heard the noise, they would have seen his candle. It saved his life. Nope. Everything Hashem does is for the best, even when it hurts. So maybe Sarah, Kulan Shaman Letova, means that Sarah was able to what? Was able to be the type of person who said everything is for the best. Or like Tanis Daf Chaf Aleph, Nochem Ish Gamzu. Maseches Tanis Daf Chaf Aleph. Nochem Ish Gamzu. Why was he called Nochem Ish Gamzu? Because he always said Gamzu Letova. Read the story there. The man was suffering horrifically. Physical suffering, horrific physical anguish. Gamzu Letova. Tzaddik. So Sarah also, she's kidnapped, she endures famine, she's ridiculed by her co-wife, she suffers infertility for decades, and yet, Kulan Shavan Letova, she said Gamzu Letova. That's one pshat. There's another pshat, another way to say it, yeah?
Based on that pshat, I definitely think it's nice that there are a lot of people in the Torah who struggle with that,
yeah.
Brutal lives and went through a lot, and if you're going to live your life saying that everything's really good, and so like that, then why wouldn't we be saying that for every single person who had a tough life in the Torah?
Again, it's a madriga. It's a madriga to be able to say that. I mean, what about Yaakov Avinu? He stands before Yaakov Avinu, on the one hand, stands before his brother Esav, who is the embodiment of Ayin Ra, and Esav's like, you know, Yeshli Rav, I'm doing okay, not killing it, I'm doing fine, I'm getting by, I'm paying my bills. And Yaakov's like, oh, Yeshli Kol, I have everything. So on the one hand, Yaakov is the ultimate embodiment of Ayin Tov. On the other hand, Yaakov stands before Paro and he says, my life has been like short and difficult. And he actually got punished for that. How many years did Yaakov Avinu live?
How many years did Avram live? And how about Yitzchak? Yitzchak? 180? Yaakov? No? Yitzchak Yaakov, what do you say? 147. Because he complained, Chazal say, the words that he said before Paro, for each of those words, which were a little bit negative, where he was sort of complaining about his life, he lost years of his life. Right? Really, Avram also, in theory, could have, should have lived to 180. Chazal say Avram died 5 years early, so that he wouldn't see Esau go off the derech. Right? But Yaakov really lost a whole bunch of years because he lost 33 years because of 33 expressions that he said, 33 words that he said, which seemed like he was complaining. But the truth is, again, an answer to your question, right? On the one hand, Yaakov Avinu we see is punished for having a little bit of a negative perspective. On the other hand, Yaakov is the one who says to Esav, who says, Yeshli Rav, I'm doing okay. And Yaakov says, Yeshli Kol, I have everything. I have exactly what I'm supposed to have. Gamzu Letova. I know exactly. Right? That's why the Vilna Gaon says, in the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Tov Ayin Hu Yivorach. A person who has
person with a good eye is blessed. Tov ayin, hu yibarach. If you have a good eye, you'll be blessed. What's the gematria of Tov ayin?
No, regular. Tov is how much? Gematria of Tov?
17 and ayin. 147. So Yaakov Avinu is gematria, the life of Yaakov Avinu, 147, is a life of Ayin Tov, as opposed to Esav HaRasha, which is a life of Ayin Ra.
How do you know that Esav, wherever he goes, he takes his Ayin Ra with him? How do you know?
How much is Ayin Ra?
400.
What's the Indian of Ayin Ra? 400. Right. When Esav comes to Yaakov,
and he says that, Yeshli Rav, I feel like you're doing better financially than me, Yaakov, you know? Right? And Esav's coming to harm Yaakov, what is he coming with? He's coming with his 400 men. So how does Yaakov counter? How does Yaakov fight back? Yaakov says, Yeshli Kol. Right? I have everything. Ayin Tov is going to... It's going to block Ayin Ra. What's the gematria of Yesh Li Kol? Yesh Li Kol. And Yaakov says to... Yaakov says, Yesh Li Kol.
310.
40.
50. Right?
No?
Is it right now?
Yeah,
400. All right, so when someone comes at you with an Ayin Ra, Esav and his 400 men is Ayin Ra, so you fight back with what? You fight back with Yeshli Kol. You say, I have everything I need, you can't harm me. I'm in the hands of Hashem, I'm protected. There's nothing you could do. I'll give you one more from this week's Parsha. Avram Avinu is trying to bury his beloved Sarah. And who's he dealing with? He's dealing with a very deceptive man by the name of Ephron, who pretends he's super generous, but he's the stingiest, most deceptive individual. Yeah, that we've met in the Torah so far since the Nachash, I guess. And everyone's like, yeah, no, take it for free. What does Avram pay him? 400, right? 400 shekel kesef. Right, that's Avram's way of responding to Ephron. He says, that's his way of calling him out. Right. He says, no, you're claiming you're an Ayin Tov kind of guy, that you're very generous. You're an Ayin Ra kind of guy. You want to squeeze me for every penny that you can get, and I'm going to pay you in full 400 shekel. I'm going to meet you where you are. I'm going to meet your Ayin Ra, 400 shekel kesef over La Socher. I'm going to pay you in quality,
coins. Yeah? Over La Socher, the ancient equivalent of Bitcoin. Yeah? Also, Gematria of Ephron.
Gematria of Ephron. Ayin Pei Reishnu and Ephron, how much?
400,
no? 70 plus 80, 150. Reish, another 200, is 350. Nun is 50, is 400. Right, so Avram calls him out. He's like, no, I know what you're about. You're Ephron. I'm paying you in 400. I know exactly what your needs are. You're an Esav type of guy. You're an Ayin Ra. Esav also pretends, I want to give you a kiss. He wants to bite you. He wants to kill you. Ephron, oh yeah, take the land for free. You're going to come later, and you're going to start complaining with your Ayin Ra. We're not doing that. I'm paying you up front. I know your essence. Your name is your essence. I know who you are. And I'm paying you up front. Okay? Good. So let's go back to Tov Ayin Hu Yivarach for a second. Let's go back to Yaakov Avinu for a second. Because Yaakov Avinu's life is divided into two stages. When he was standing before Paro, he said, what? My life has been short and difficult. How old was he at the time he's standing before Paro? Torah tells us he's 130 years old. And then the last 17 years of Yaakov's life, so to speak, the Tov years, the good years, are spent where? Ironically enough, in Mitzrayim. Right? As the world around him is crumbling, Yaakov Avinu, whose life, again, the first 130 years were, Yaakov... Meaning, in response to your question, it's okay for the Avos to be human also. Yaakov Avinu dealt with an Esav. He dealt with a Lavan. He dealt with his daughter Dina being raped. He dealt with his brothers nearly killing and selling their other brother, who they hated. He dealt with some real stuff. So
So he comes before power and he says, you know what, I've had a tough life. And because he's Yaakov Avinu, Hashem criticizes him for that. You're not allowed to say you had a tough life. You should have been more like Sarah, Gamzu Latova, Kulan Shavin Latova. That's a very high level, though. So not everyone's able to, you know, Rabbi Akiva's, everything God does is for the best, is a very high madriga. Nochem Ish Gamzu, Gamzu Latova is a very high level. Rabbi Akiva's getting his flesh ripped off his body. The students are blaspheming God. They're saying, Rabbeinu Ad Kad, you still believe? They're questioning with Amunah. And Rabbi Akiva says, yeah, I'm on a madriga that I don't have questions. I'm actually very happy. I've been waiting my whole life to dial Kiddush Hashem. That's a very, very, very lofty madriga. Okay, but let's just say one more pshat in Kulan Shavan Latova. Let's say one more pshat. I heard this from a 11th grade girl who I teach on Mondays. I mentioned this Rashi, and I said, what's the pshat in Kulan Shavan Latova? One of the 11th graders in Nala High School for Girls said the following pshat. It was a beautiful pshat. She said, sometimes in life, when a person feels that Hashem is treating them the way that they like to be treated, so then they behave a little bit better. And when you feel like things are not going your way, so you feel like, Hashem, you're not good to me, so I don't have to be good to you. And Hashem, you didn't treat me the way I wanted to be treated. I was in a relationship, and it broke up, and now I'm feeling hurt, and Hashem, why did you put me through that? So I'm not going to daven today. Or if I'm going to daven, I'm not going to concentrate. I'm not going to daven with Kavana. Or I'm not going to learn. Right? We respond sometimes to the way that Hashem, I got the job, you didn't get the job, I didn't get the job, whatever, I'm mad at God. Kulan Shavan Latova might not be reflecting the experiences of Sarah's life. She had ups and downs like every person. She had some pretty heavy downs and some pretty high highs. But Kulan Shavan Latova, she maintained her goodness throughout. She didn't act in accordance with the way that she felt God was treating her. And we all do that. When we feel that things are going our way, so then Hashem is good. Yeah. And when things are going bad, you also say, Baruch Hashem, with the same gusto. Right? It's hard. So Kulan Shavan Latova, whatever she went through, she maintained a certain what? Like the Baal Shem Tov says on Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamid, she maintained a certain balance in her life, that she was able to what? That she was able to always to be good, regardless of what happened to her. When people mistreated her, she still acted good. I think that's a very chush of insight and a very high madrig. Okay? So let's try to understand. Again, the Rebbe wants to understand, what's with this Rashi, 127, Chai Yisara, Shnei Chai Yisara, Kulan Shavan Latova. So he says the following. And this piece is short, it packs a punch. And it goes straight to the Rebbe's experience. And this is from the year Tafshin. This is the first of the 3 years of Torah. Again, we only have Chai Yisara Torah from this year, from the year Tafshin, 1939-1940. Amnam, he says in the second paragraph, Issa b'sefer HaKadosh Ma'or v'shemesh. We find in the Sefer Ma'or v'shemesh, another of Kolonimus Kam and Epstein. Bereish Parshas Va'era. He says at the beginning of Parshas Va'era, Meharav Akadosh Isha Lokim Ravanacha Mendel Zatzal Mirimanov. He quotes from the Rimanover, who explains the Gemara in Brachos Dav Heyam at Aleph. Nemar Brisba Melach, Venemar Brisba Yisurim. We find Psukim that covenant, a bris, is mentioned in the context of salt. The Bris Melach, when you bring a carbon, Al Kol Karbanecha Takriv Melach, you place salt. And we find what? And we find bris, we find an expression of covenant, of bond, of a bris, in the context of Yisurin. So I guess that means if melach, if salt can be used for a bris, to create some type of relationship, when we bring a carbon, and Yisurin is a bris, so that means, I guess, that salt and Yisurin have something in common. What's the connection between salt and Yisurin? That's what the Gemara wants to know. So the Gemara says, ma melach mimatekes habasar, just like salt literally sweetens, but it means prepares the meat, right? To draw the blood out of the meat, or to flavor the meat. Right? The spices give flavor to the meat. Af yisurin memarkin kol avonosav shel adam. So too, suffering also, the same way that the meat becomes enhanced by the proper salting techniques, so too, yisurim are cleansing for a person. The salt extracts the blood from the meat. Suffering extracts the averos from a person. You're paying your averos in suffering. Okay, that's what the Gemara says. But says the Mor v'Shemesh in the name of the Rimanover, the Hainu, Ma Melech Imosif Yoser Mikashior, Yefshar Lakabel Hanamei Abasar. But what happens if you put too much salt in the meat or in any dish that you're eating? If you put spices, no spices in the soup, so the soup tastes bland. It tastes like hot water. But if you put too many spices, you put too much salt in the chicken soup, right? Then you're not going to enjoy it either. So the same thing is true when it comes to Yisurin, when it comes to suffering. Hashem knows how to what? How to give us the right amount of Yisurin that it can help us to what? To become our better selves without breaking us. Just like a person who's cooking knows how to prepare the meat in a way that it doesn't ruin it. Rakdafka im nimlach kashiur, if it's salted properly. Kacha Yisurin, yiyu mimuzogim shiayacholas lakablam, viyu mimuzogim berachamim. So too, the Yisurim that a person receives in this world have to be what? Memuzag. Zigasakos. Zigasakos means what? Diluting the wine. But it means it has to be measured. It has to be diluted. The Yisurim have to be balanced in such a way that we're able to receive them. And Hashem, we ask that you should dilute them with what? With rachamim, with rachmanis. It shouldn't be a suffering that is too heavy for us to handle. It should be a suffering that we understand is purifying, is cleansing. Wanted to say something?
Yeah, if you're over if there's something similar, but you start in the bottom,
yeah.
That, like, on the surface, like, if you take a plain salt, like, you eat, like, right. Bitter, it's gross. Like,
can't eat salt by itself, right.
And then, like, but if you, like, you just look at it, and, like, the bigger picture, like, what's the point of salt to make things better? So, like,
right.
Like, so it's with, like, you start, like, on the surface, yeah, you're going through it, but right. So, like, why is this happening? Who knows?
Right.
But, and, like, no one wants to taste it. Like, by itself, but
right.
Look at the bigger picture.
See
day,
how it.
You'll see
very nice.
Like, purpose.
Right, exactly. The Yisurin are purposeful. The same way you wouldn't eat the salt by itself. But in the right measure, it makes the meat delicious. So too, the challenges of our life makes life geschmack. It makes life tasty. V'hinei Rashi Piresh V'lamanis mecham misa sar lakedas Yitzchak. However, now we have to ask the hard question, which is, what if Sarah was such a tzedekes, 127, and kulan shavin letova, she maintained the proper attitude, or like that 11th grade girl suggested, maybe she maintained her good behavior despite all the suffering she went through. So then you would kind of hope that the punchline of the story would be a happy ending. No? Such a great woman, Sarah. And the punchline is such a sad and tragic death. Not only is the fact that she died, the way she died, so tragic, but the thoughts that she had in her mind at that moment were probably so sad. When she saw Avram Shech, she didn't know anything about this. He didn't tell her about Akedas Yitzchak. She finds out that Avram is about to Shecht her son. She thinks Avram's having a mental breakdown. She has no idea what's going on. She has a heart attack and she dies. With a question of, like, what type of crazy man is my husband? She didn't know anything. It's interesting. Why were they in? How did they get to Hebron? Earlier in the Torah, Avram and Sarah were not living in Hebron. Why were they in Hebron? I saw an amazing pshat. I saw an unbelievable pshat. The Shachal HaTorah, the Mordechai HaKohen, who was a Talmud of the Arizal, deep sefer, the Sifsei Kohen, not the same as the Shach and the Shulchan Aruch. The Shachal HaTorah, Sifsei Kohen on Chumash, by a student of the Arizal. He said that Avram told him, what did he tell her when he left, you know? Where did he claim he was going? So he said, oh, we're going to learn in yeshiva. We're going to learn in Hebron. Really, you're going to learn in Hebron? Yeah, we're going to learn in Hebron. Apparently the Satan came and told Sarah, you think they're learning in Hebron? Go check it out, you'll see, they're not in Hebron. What do you mean? Avram told me. When he left, he told me he's going with Yitzhak to learn in Hebron. Yitzhara, whatever, the Satan comes and says, I'm telling you, it's not true, and if you don't believe me, go check it out yourself. So Sarah goes to Hebron to see what's going on. There's no sign of Avram and Yitzhak. Just looking around, what's going on here? What on earth is going on here? So we know from Bamidbar, from Chumash Bamidbar, that there were some giants who lived in Hebron. So Sarah goes over to these giants, yeah, and she says, can you do me a favor? You guys are really tall. Can you, like, look out in the distance and see if you see my husband and my son anywhere? Pretty wacky tradition. Shachal Torah says a lot of interesting things. So the giants, Sifsei Kohen. So the giants start looking
And they're like, oh yeah, there's a guy, describe your husband to us, you know? Like, yeah, I think we see him. Yeah, your son, how old is he? 37? Yeah, that guy looks like he's 37. But what are they doing? They're supposed to be here learning Torah. It looks like he's tying him up with a knife in his hand. As the Shachla Torah says. And Sarah dies in Hebron. Vayavo Avram lispod l'sarav livkosa. And Avram comes back and he finds that Sarah, what was she doing in Hebron? They weren't living in Hebron at the time. But she came to Hebron to see, and again, the Satan, she never would have suspected, but the Satan came and said, I'm telling you, I was go check it out with your own eyes, they're not in Hebron. And then she asked the local giants to help her track down her husband and her son. And when she heard what was going on, she died on the spot. It's crazy. Yeah.
What did you think, though, after Sarah's living with Avram for like all these years, that she would have some trust or something? Like, is she like?
It's very hard. There's a totally different way, by the way, to learn the death of Sarah in Pnimiyas HaTorah, which is totally latov. She didn't die out of fear. She didn't die out of a heart attack. She wasn't overwhelmed by the sight of the Akedah. The Pasha Pshat is like that. I mean, he quotes Rashi. Let's read the Rashi, right? The Lashon of Rashi is, why is Misa Sarah next to Akedah Yitzchak? Shal Yidei Besuras HaAkedah Shenes Damin Benal Deshchita. That when she got the news of the Akedah, that her son was what? Nizdamin, was prepared for slaughter. Ukama'at Shalo Nishchat. And he was almost killed. So she found out he wasn't killed, or she thought he was killed. A lot to take out of this Rashi. But when she saw, she found out that her husband, that her son was nearly slaughtered, parcha nishmasa miman of a mesa. Her soul left her body and she died. That's what Rashi says. We all assume that in the negative, or in the sense of a tragedy. She had a heart attack on the spot. She was overwhelmed by the news. The thought of losing her son, or the thought that she lost her son, was enough to kill her. There's a different way to learn it also. A very positive way. More like the Rabbi Akiva, that this is the ultimate sacrifice that I've been waiting for. And part of what Sarah was doing was that she wanted to join in with the Akedah. She wanted to join her son on the way up. Whatever that means. Maybe Sunday we'll do a shir on it. A very deep idea. But the Rebbe's going pasha pshat. This is a tragedy. How could it be? And the Rebbe's talking from, you know, reporting live from the Warsaw Ghetto, right? This is a tragedy. This is a tragedy. How could it be that such a holy woman like Sarah died such a painful and tragic death? Okay? So he writes in the bottom line. Yeah, Ashi, you wanted to say something?
Last year, Pastor Magi said that there was this amazing yichud.
That's right.
So she wanted
the Avodas Yisrael says she wanted to join in, to connect. She wanted to join in that connection. It's very intense. I don't know why the Rebbe wrote it that way. That Moshe Rabbeinu, the loyal shepherd, placed the death of Sarah next to Akedas Yitzchak. So first of all, Moshe, he's not the author of the Torah, last I checked. I mean, Rebbe's being poetic, but I'm not sure. It's like it's a little dangerous to say it that way. Again, not for from Jews who know Hashem wrote the Torah, but it's just like a little bit of Moshe placed, again, he's speaking poetically. Zichru Torah's Moshe. The Torah is called Moshe's Torah. But anyways, Moshe, the Raya Mehemna, literally means the faithful shepherd. He placed the death of Sarah next to Akedas Yitzchak. Turn the page. Kedei lahamlitz tov ba'adenu. In order to be a melitz yosher for us. In what sense? Ulaharos, and to show us. To prove on our behalf. Sarah's death proves what? That sometimes it's too much for a Jew to handle. Shal yidei yisurim chas v'chalila yosar midai ma na'aseh shaparcha nishmasa. Like we learned from the Rimanover. Right? Like Jonathan Berger taught us that the salt has to be what? You can't have the salt by itself. And if it's too salty, like the Rimanover said, or if the yisurim are too much, it's going to ruin everything. So Sarah's death, in a sense, was a mesiras nefesh. She died as a way of saying to Hashem, Hashem, you got to go easy on Klal yourself. You could push someone too far. God forbid that they'll die. Va'od b'im nasa kain b'sara. And that's exactly the point. Why are we highlighting how great, how awesome, how lofty, how holy Sarah was? Because even someone that holy could have a breaking point with Yisurim. Now again, for ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. Hashem got it wrong. Hashem pushed her too far. Right? What's the punchline? it's hard to know what the punchline is. But the punchline is, Sarah's death, right, becomes a merit for us to turn into a tefillah, or a bakasha, or dare I say, a challenge to Hashem, to say, Hashem, I'm not as big of a tzaddik as Sarah was a tzaddikas. And therefore, if Sarah was pushed to a point that she cracked, so to speak, again, obviously there's much more to it. But if Sarah reached a breaking point, so what do you expect from me, Hashem? And that's a tefillah. The Rebbe's davening from the Warsaw Ghetto. If a tzaddikas gedola kizo, Shabbas kuf, kabas chaf lachay, when she was 100, she was like a 20-year-old in terms of her spiritual innocence, and she was never concerned with her physical appearance, because she understood the purpose of life is to develop my spirit. And she was beautiful. She's one of those beautiful women in Torah, the Gemara says. One of those beautiful women in history. Vishnei chayisara and kulan shavin letova. And she said gamzu letova. And she always acted good no matter what Hashem did to her. And nonetheless, mikol makom lo yachal lispol yisurim kashim, mikol shekhen anachto. If she couldn't handle it, then what? Then we certainly can't handle it. Okay, what are you supposed to do with a Torah like this? What do you do? We're learning Eish Kodesh. What are we supposed to do with a piece of Torah like this?
Give up?
Yeah. Or what's the? Right. Make excuses. Give up. Say, you know, if Sarah can't handle life, then what do you expect from Hashem? No, really. What's the? You have to ask yourself. I mean, it's a beautiful, tragic piece of Torah, which is what the whole Sefer is. But we're learning it to be better Jews. We're not learning it just to study, you know, ancient texts from the Holocaust era. We're trying to be inspired by the Rebbe's legacy. So what's the lesson? Again, I think he's leaving us a tefillah, right? I think first of all, he's leaving us a tefillah. That it's okay for us to say to Hashem, right? I feel I'm not gonna give up. Sorry, I didn't give up. She didn't choose to, right? She didn't choose to die, but it got to a point where she was just completely overwhelmed by her suffering. So we say to Hashem, you have to, it's tefillah, Hashem, go easy on us. And that's okay. We should try to ask for Hashem's rahmanis. You don't have to only do it on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Two times a year, you show up and you're like, Hashem, please, I know you might be mad at me, but please don't punish me. Every day you should say, Hashem, please go easy on me. Have rahmanis on me. Have rahmanis on me. I daven every single morning that Hashem should have rahmanis on me in a very small, relatively very small thing. It's called the George Washington Bridge. Hashem should have rahmanis on me. I'm serious, I daven every morning. And when I cross the bridge, I say thank you to Hashem, whether it's bad traffic or good traffic. Thank you, Hashem. Have rachmanis. Because right? I know I'm going to be a different person. I'm not sorry. I'm not going to be able to cool. I'm not going to say gamzu tova if there's an accident and I'm stuck. And then I get to the copy machine on the sixth floor and it's broken. And then I'm running around like a chicken without a head. And it takes me 3 hours just to get from my house to the shiur room. So Hashem, have rachmanis. That's the tefillah that I'd be saying. Say to Hashem, I understand, I'm not immature, I understand suffering has a place, I understand it sweetens the meat, I understand the role of the Yisurim in the life of a person, I understand it takes away my Averos, it's cleansing, but do it in a way that I can handle it. That's a very powerful tefillah, and Sarah became an example for us in that regard. Yeah?
I think that it shows that, A, like we were saying before, that Sarah and the rest of us and Imaz were human.
Right.
Right. That you're receiving is not
adopted. Right. At the end of the day, no matter what, Hashem has the final say. And that's powerful and that's humbling.
And it's really good.
And it's really good, right. And in some way, it's even right, well, what we perceive as a tragic end, kulan shavin letova, right? Even the end is good. Not just all the challenges along the way, she said gamzu letova, but literally till her dying breath, this was also good. Somehow, to us it seems painful and tragic. But in some way, this was also for the best. Yeah, what do you want to say, Adam?
In retrospect, do we know why she died? Like, why did she deserve to die?
Deserve to die is a hard question. I don't know.
Like, and why was the sultan sent to her?
I don't know. Right, why is she being tested in this way? Why is the sultan starting up with her? Right. They could have gone, they could have done the Akedah, they could have come back in good health, and the Avram could have said to Sarah, let me tell you where we really were. And it was all from Hashem. And he would have told her in a way that was sensitive, in a way that, of course, she would have understood. And Avram has been through many tests, so she knows that. And why? What reshus did the Satan have, according to that Midrashic tradition, to start up with her? It's a great...
Avram lied to her.
Avram lied to her, yeah. Yeah, he lied to her.
according to that approach, he lied to her when he left. Claimed he was going elsewhere. Didn't tell her. That's a good question. What right did the Satan have to drag poor, innocent, sweet Sarah into this? And especially since it ended this way. Why did she deserve to die like this? So the Rebbe has one more point. The Rebbe says, Od Efshar Lomar. Shagam Sarah Imenu Atzma Shenitna Kolkach Eliba Maisa Keda Shaparcha Nishmasa. That yes, you could say the following. That Sarah Imenu herself, who felt so deeply the tzara of the Akedah that it caused her to have a heart attack, she did so for the goodness of the Jewish people. Why? What does that mean? L'haros la'Hashem, eich i'efshar li'Yisrael lizbol yisurim yoser midai. Sarah did this on our behalf. Now, I'm not sure what the Rebbe is adding here. What's the od efshar lom? What's he adding? I mean, what was the last point? The last point is, why did the Torah put Sarah, why did Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, write the Akedah next to Sarah's passing? To show that what? That if a righteous woman like Sarah can't handle it, then kal v'chomer us. But then what's the od efshar lomar? And additionally, you could say that Sarah may know, right? So I think we're going to be saying like this. Sarah could have handled it. If Sarah wanted, she could have handled it. She was a big enough person to handle it. But she was nitna kol kach aliva ma'is akedah. She allowed herself to take the akedah to heart. You hear the difference? It's not that she was overwhelmed and had a heart attack. She realized this is an opportunity for me to what? To almost like intentionally absorb the pain of the akedah and to give my life over it. And that itself will become a source of defense for the Jewish people. You hear the difference? It's intense. It's super intense to say. She took to heart. She chose to take to heart the Akedah in such a way. She allowed herself to be emotionally overwhelmed. The Tovas Yisrael asa. She did so for the goodness of the Jewish people. Laharos LaHashem Eich Efshar LiYisrael Lispol Yisurim Yoser Midai. To prove, as it were, to Hashem, right, that the Jewish people can't handle Yisurim that are too intense. Va'afilu Misha Bechemlas Hashem Nishar Chai Gam Acher Yisurav. And of course, the Rebbe is now speaking to his own people. And even one who survives, who doesn't actually die, one who emerges from the ashes of Auschwitz, one who comes back from that hell on earth of the Holocaust, the Rebbe says, even those of us who are going to make it through, the psychological, the emotional, the spiritual damage of these years that we're going through, the Rebbe says, Mikol makom, chelke kocho, mocho, rucho, nishbar v'nevdu v'menu. His strength, his mind, his spirit is broken. You have people coming out who survived, skin and bones, right? Physically, completely emaciated from their experience, spiritually, totally lost in the world. Talk to people who, again, it's harder to find people like this, but talk to people who grew up, you know, the children of Holocaust survivors. Right? Some of them describe, or Weinberger said many times, you know, the torment that people, you know, wake up in the middle of the night screaming, having nightmares about the experience. So the damage to their koach, to their moach, to their ruach, right? It's all really significant. And he references the Gemara in Bava Kamma. It's the Gemara in Bava Kamma, Daf Samachay. Mali kotle kulo, mali kotle palga. The Gemara says, what difference does it make if you kill someone partially, if you kill someone fully? In other words, Hashem, you're killing us. You're killing us. We're not going to be able to recover from this. So the Rebbe is upping the ante. The Rebbe is saying, not only am I asking that we should have the strength to physically not die, but Hashem, we're dying now. Every day that we're not able to daven, to learn, to have normal amount of food, to live our lives, right? Living under these conditions, you're killing us, Hashem. What difference does it make? The Gemara says, if you're killing someone partially, you're killing someone fully. Right? We're going to learn about Malchus and Misa. The relationship between lashes is like a form, a partial form of Misa. Right? It's a slow death. Yeah.
Where's the Gemara?
Bava Kamma Samachay. Mali Kotle Kula, Mali Kotle Palga. Bava Kamma Samachay Amar Aleph. Okay, so Sarah gave her life. Now, here's the punchline. Says the Rebbe, so you'll tell me, so Sarah chose to die so that we can have a merit, that it could be a source of schus for us. But you have a tain on Sarah. What's the tain on Sarah? B'chayit b'hem. A Jew is obligated to live. What about all the things you could have accomplished, Sarah, had you continued to live? I understand. Your sacrifice left a tremendous legacy of sacrifice that we can draw on. And we can daven, and we can say, Hashem, look, if Sarah couldn't handle it, in quotes, because she could, but she chose not to handle it to make the point, so then we can't handle it. But what about the obligation to live? What about the obligation to live? The Rebbe needs to push back now and tell people, you have an obligation to live. So what about the obligation to live? We mentioned yesterday the Klosenberger Rebbe. The Klosenberger Rebbe said after the Holocaust, what do survivors have to say? Ashamnu, bagadnu, gazalnu, dibarnu, dofi. What did we do wrong? What was it like the first, you know, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, those Jews in a DP camp? What do we ashamnu? We did anything. Gazalnu, what's my gazalnu? I stole a couple, found a few potato skins and saved my life. I took them without permission from the Nazis in Yimach Shemam. What's that? So the Rebbe says, our ashamnu is bagadnu, gazalnu is primarily because for many of us, we had lost the desire to live. That was our avera. The Torah says you have an obligation to want to live. V'chai b'hem. You have to want to live. The Jew has to have a desire to live. So how is Sarah allowed to die? So says the Rebbe in the last paragraph, Zeshem etarei tzapasuk. Shnei chai Sarah. Why does the pasuk start by Yihiyu chai Sarah? Shnei chai Sarah. It ends Shnei chai Sarah. She'alechora chata Sarah neged shar shnoseah. In a certain sense, you could say that Sarah sinned against her remaining years. Shahayala lichios. She was intended to live longer, no? B'imlo lakha kolkach aliva maisa akeda. Had she not taken the akeda so heavily to heart, then what? Then she would have lived longer. So, in a certain sense, it was suicidal. She gave in. So says the Rebbe, of course not. Sarah knew what she was doing. Aval keivan shelitova sisrael asa. Meramis hapasuk shnechai Sarah. The pasuk says, no, 127, these are the years of the life of Sarah. She did not die prematurely. In case you think it's a tragedy that Sarah left us, even with the greatest kavanas, that Sarah left this world before her time, no, the Torah doubles down and says, no, Shnei Chai Sarah, these are the years of Sarah. That's how long she was supposed to live. Hainu Shnoseh, these are her years. Shela Acher, HaKuf Chav Zayin, Kulan Shavos Latova, all 127 were good from beginning to end. Kigam Imahem Lo Chata. That even, yes, even towards her own years, she did not sin. In other words, there was no year 128, 129, and 130 that say, hey, Sarah, what happened to us? You didn't give us a chance. You tapped out at 127. No, Shnei Chai Yisrael, these are her years. L'chein yirachim Hashem aleinu v'al kol Yisrael v'yoshienu b'mehera b'ruchnias v'gufnias b'chasadim niglim. And therefore the Rebbe says, Sarah's sacrifice should be enough for all of us, and now Hashem, all we want is what? All we want is salvation. Sarah paid the price already. Whether it's Sarah paying the price, whether she knew she was paying the price or didn't know, either way, it's our tefillah. If you broke her, that shows that even a great tzaddikus like Sarah sometimes cracks. And if she chose to feel the pain in such a way that she gave her life in that way, then that should be enough of a sacrifice to save us, Hashem. But I'll just end by telling you, it is very geschmack. It's very true that Sarah really was supposed to live 127 years. Because the Medrash in this week's parasha says that Hashem makes the life of the tzaddikim complete. They live full lives. They live the life that they're supposed to live from beginning to end. That's why sometimes tzaddikim are born and die on the same day. The Rebbe in the Derech HaMelech and his other Sefer and Chumash from before the war, he says, but you see tzaddikim who don't die on their birthday. He discusses that. But the truth is that Avram and Sarah, being the perfect couple that they were, right? They lived the same number of years. So you'll tell me, wait, what? Avram lived 175 years. And Sarah lived 127 years. What do you mean they lived the same number of years? So, chevra, you have to know what Chazal say. How old was Avram when he discovered Hashem? 3 years old. Good, that's one opinion. I'll ask you again. How old was Avram when he discovered Hashem? How old was Avram when he discovered Hashem? 48 years old. One opinion of the Medrash, he was 48 years old. Right? So I saw on a Sefer once, Sefer is called Binyan David, or David Meislish. I think that's his name. So he said that if you think about it like this, Avraham was an idol worshiper in his early years. And Avraham became frum at age 48, according to one opinion of Chazal. That means from 48 to 175 is how many? is 127. Sarah, kulan shavin letova. Sarah, all 127 years were good. She was from the beginning, whatever that means. So she had 127 good years. But Avram only started at 48. So he needed 127 years from what? From the time that he discovers Hashem until his death. So from 48 to 175 is 127. So Avram and Sarah, in a certain sense, actually lived meaningful years, the same number of years. So of course, the only question left on the table then is, what's the secret of the number 127? Why is that the magic number that Avram and Sarah lived? So if you ask me again on Hanukkah, I'll tell you. Okay. Shkoyach. Yeah. Avram Zalman.
I'm not saying the Rebbe is wrong. I just find it very hard to believe that she died because she wanted to.
She surrendered. She surrendered on behalf of the Jewish people.
She heard her son was being killed by her husband.
Okay, so you're taking the very human approach, which is fine. That's fine. You're being real. You're being realistic. Like a good mother who saw something terrifying. A son she waited 90 years for, she had a heart attack and died. Not crazy to say that. But obviously there's layers to the Torah. On a deeper level, Sarah, whose life was so holy, would have been able to handle such a thing. And the fact that she chose to feel that pain and allow her heart to break, right? It's a big thing to be able to feel someone else's pain. Many of us, when we hear painful things, we block it out. We don't want to hear it. Did I tell you this once? That the Tribina Rav said the difference between himself and the Chazon Ish. I think I told you this once. The Tribina Rav said that the difference between myself and the Chazon Ish is that when the Chazon Ish sits with people and he listens to their tzaras, he's fully present with them. He feels their pain 100%. But then afterwards, he's able to what? To get back to his Gemara. And to be 100% focused on his Gemara. The Tribina Rav, who actually had two heart attacks in his lifetime upon hearing bad news, said, when I would hear painful news like that, it broke me so much that I couldn't go back, I couldn't just shift gears afterwards. He said that he was envious of the Chazon Ish. It wasn't that the Chazon Ish wasn't with you in your pain. Because if you ignore the person says, oh, Rabbi, I'm going through this difficulty. Oh, yeah, okay, whatever. Then I go back to my Gemara, I go back to my learning. I wasn't pained by your pain. But if I really feel your pain, right, it could break a person. That's what we're learning. So the Chazon Ish, the Tribina Rav said, the Chazon Ish had this amazing ability. He could be with you 100% of your pain, but also afterwards, he somehow knew how to package that up in his heart and be able to shift gears back to working on a difficult sugya. The Tribina Rav said, I couldn't do that. I would either have to not really feel the person's pain and then be able to stay focused on my learning, or I'd feel the person's pain and I would be like, I'm done for the day, I can't learn anymore. So I'm overwhelmed, my heart is too broken to learn. So the expansiveness of the Chazon Ish's heart and his mind was that he could feel the pain and he could also still get back to work afterwards. It's a high madriga. So Sarah, in theory, should have been able to handle this nisayon, and then get back to work. But she said, you know what, I'm gonna allow myself to break and it'll be a merit for Klal Yisrael forever. Again, only the Eish Kodesh could say such a thing. Could never say such a Torah. Yeah. Kuf Chav Zayin, yeah.
Accepted
it all. Very good. Kuf Chav Zayin. It's Makabel. She's Makabel Kol Zeh. She took it all. Very good. Nice numbers. All right. Shkoyach.